And I'm like, for a moment, people are like, is Marco Rubio on? Next time, maybe. All right. But Alex is great. We'll have him. So first thing, you were at a conference last week, and we never did get to this when we had you on last Friday, but I definitely want to. You were at an Associated Industries of Florida conference on water quality, a bunch of experts to come in and just talk about water quality in Florida. Huge issue, in some ways more so for the rest of the state than for the panhandle, but still important to all of us. I specifically wanted to ask you about this PFAS issue. This is the kind of thing, from what I'm hearing, this is way more significant in a bad way than any of us had really previously understood. What was your takeaway? And maybe do a little of explaining to people why we should care about this issue.
Yeah, absolutely. So if you Google PFAS, P-F-A-S, online in Pensacola, you will start to see a ton of Pensacola News Journal articles about whole neighborhoods being taken off of water systems in the past few years because of the discovery of PFAS in their well water. So PFAS is in everything. It's in your nonstick pans, fire extinguishers, any kind of, stain resistant or fire retardant clothing, carpets, furniture, everything. It's everywhere. The problem is that it has some serious health consequences. It contaminates your soil, and it can stay there forever if it's not, actively removed.
And the issue for us locally is that it's used in fire suppression that is done on the military bases historically, and at the airport, the foam systems. That's where a lot of the PFAS and the runoff into the water system here locally came from. Is that basically right?
No, exactly. The FAA actually requires airports to disperse this foam, like on any plane crash. So it's you're essentially being forced to contaminate your own soil by federal law.
Okay.
We're starting to wrap our hands around exactly how to do it, how to address it, remediate, pull out the contaminants from the soil and the water. But we're trying to figure out how not to put the cart before the horse. You have the EPA at the federal level and DEP at the state level, kind of threatening cities. If they don't do certain things, they'll get in a lot of trouble. The problem is they haven't figured out exactly what an acceptable amount of this chemical is in the water or the soil. So at this point they're kind of guessing. The EPA has pretty much said this is what we think is probably okay, probably maybe okay, and it's 70 parts per trillion in water that's tested for certain types of PFAS. There's no clear guidance. The cities are kind of flying blind. You want to hope that cities do the right thing. I know the city of Pensacola is. They're taking some serious measures. They've invested a lot of money in water filtration, especially on the airport. But this is going to take a combination of, figuring out, there's probably some liability for manufacturers, figuring out what the responsibilities are for businesses who know that this stuff is toxic now, and coming up with a plan to get a lot of neighborhoods off their well water, get into closed systems, and, fix soil. I mean, this is going to have long-lasting impacts for our land and water quality in Florida for decades to come.
And as I understand it, the filtration that needs to be done in order to clean the water that is contaminated, even to that parts per trillion level, that those filters are, you have to replace them pretty frequently. The cost of those filters has gone up substantially in recent years due to a variety of factors. And so this is starting to look like not just a hard problem to solve, but even where there's the ability to somewhat solve or mitigate the harm, the mitigation is itself so either difficult or, expensive as to be a real challenge for anybody who's tasked with doing it. I mean, and I'm tell me if any of that is wrong.
No, not at all. I mean, I filed a bill last year. It was one of the few that didn't pass. I'm working with, some close friends in the legislature this year to try and get some policy started. I mean, the ultimate goal and hope is that we can come up with, something like a petroleum trust fund where we know we have significant, pollution and contaminants in our soil, and come up with a plan to make sure as much of it is cleaned up as possible in Florida. Because I mean, we all do care very much about our environment, so we absolutely need to get our hands around this in the next few years and come up with a plan to address it fully.
Yeah, and I know in terms of water quality in general, I know a lot of times we think about water issues being Northwest Florida Panhandle. We don't have the same kinds of issues as South Florida or Mid Florida does because we're on a different aquifer or feed system. But a lot of our issues do overlap. The conversion of septic to sewer is a big one. Obviously, the concern about shoreline quality and all that. I'm sure there was all kinds of good stuff that came out of this conference, and so I look forward to seeing what comes in the future from that. Anything else from that conference you want to let us know about particularly?
I got to go hang out with Sean Hamilton, who's been in the DEP for a long time over here in Northwest Florida. He's now taken over as the secretary for DEP statewide, so it's really nice having a guy with deep roots here in Escambia County, Northwest Florida, running a state agency.
Very good. Well, good to build those relationships too, right? That's how a lot of times stuff gets done. I wanted to ask you, Alex, we are into the season of the pre-legislative season where it's all the bills that get filed, and we even play a game with the bills where we try to identify. I tell whoever my producer is the bill, and then they tell me whether it's Republican or Democrat, and you can usually kind of figure some of these things out. I think the one that a lot of these are just symbolic. I mean, they're never going to get heard. They're never going to get passed, especially a lot of the ridiculous Democrat bills. But they do it just to be able to show their constituents that they're trying real hard. I think of like this one that has been filed by Bobby Powell on prohibiting slavery as an addition to the state constitution. it's just okay. I mean, we're kind of 150 years past this, but okay. I also see one, but I do see ones that Democrats are filing that I find interesting. And that's like there's one here that would require reporting of Baker Acted individuals to the gun registry to prevent people who have actually been involuntarily committed from acquiring a handgun. That's a Democrat bill, and it requires the filing of it for something that I think they're already disqualified if that's happened. Is that kind of gun legislation something that's going to get heard by the Republican legislature?
I have a hard time seeing that getting heard, Andrew. Okay. I think we have a lot of protections in place already, to prevent folks with a criminal record, violent felonies from purchasing or possessing a firearm. We've taken some steps, I think, in the wrong direction the past few years. I'm not saying that it needs to be the complete Wild West, but I think anything like that is being discussed this year, like the background checks for buying ammunition, is moving us in the wrong direction, and just it serves to fearmonger more than anything else.
Yeah, I saw some of those bills, which again, it's pretty much we're gonna treat ammunition like guns. Oh, it's a Democrat filed that bill. That's never going anywhere. Okay, fair enough. Hey, we're talking to Alex Andrade. He is our state representative for District 2, southern half of Escambia County, Gulf Breeze, and Pensacola Beach. Back to Alex Andrade. Alex, you're on the redistricting. You're involved in the redistricting work, and the accounts that I have heard, you tell me if I'm wrong, are that we're not expecting any big changes in our state legislative or senatorial districts. First of all, is that about right? We're not expecting any big changes there?
I wouldn't say big. Big is in the eye of the beholder, obviously. Sure. I'm sure there are going to be some liberal groups who are going to file a lawsuit and say it's the massive, devastating, end-of-the-world type of changes. No, we have a constitutional amendments and laws that really – the era of gerrymandering of 50 years ago just can't exist in our constitutional framework at this point. So, I wouldn't anticipate any unreasonable changes, if that makes sense.
Okay.
Things that just don't pass scrutiny.
Well, I do have a different question though, and it's one that whenever I think about Florida State, it always it flummoxes me a little bit. Here's my perception: we live in a state that is very closely split. Democrats and Republicans, right? I mean, the governor wins by a recount. You have three of the four elections, probably all four of them would have been if Matt Caldwell had persisted. But, you had all of these recounts last time because we're very evenly split as a state. We are the most purple of purple states. And yet, the state legislature is, 75% Republican in both the Senate and the House, and in fact increased in Republican representation in the last election. As a person who believes in democracy and believes in fairness, I look at that and I think that can't be right. That's got to be a redistricting issue. How can we be half and half and yet 75-25?
I think first and foremost, you have, I think the majority of it is you have large concentrations of, more homogeneously minded folks. Especially concentrated down in South Florida, some of that might get readjusted But the net effects, I mean, the fact that we win House and Senate races in the Florida legislature is more geared towards the fact that we're, you know, more organized, more disciplined, recruit better candidates, you know, more substantive candidates, folks who can kind of think for themselves and work on their own. You know, I think that has a lot to do more with the culture of our, you know, two parties than anything else. I mean, like, who are the Democrats fielding for any state cabinet position right now? You have Nikki Fried, who's giving up her position to go run for governor.
Right.
Who else they got? You know, I think it's more just, you know, Democrats have always kind of focused on the wrong things when they're trying to convince, you know, Florida voters to vote one way. I have the Santa Rosa County Democrat Party, you know, going at me on social media nonstop. They don't even have a candidate in my race.
oops. So he's real bad, but he's all you got. So, okay. All right. Well, fair enough. And I take that argument to heart that if you're going to have, because the only consideration for drawing boundaries is not draw even boundaries. It's, you know, you have, you know, geographical contiguity, you have natural boundaries. And so if you have a high concentration of Democrats in big cities and you're drawing boundaries that make sense within those cities, you might have 80-90% in some districts, even though, you know, that's lopsided. But if those are a few that can take up a lot of that 50%, of Democrat voters. I was kind of curious what the answer would be, but that actually makes sense to me. So, and you know, obviously if you field stronger political campaigns, then that's going to work too. Alex Andrade, he is our state representative for District 2, southern half of Escambia County, Gulf Breeze, and Pensacola Beach. For now, we'll see what happens in the redistricting. Alex, thanks so much for the time, sir. We'll talk to you next week.
Thanks, Andrew.
You bet. 6:50 on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. I'm Andrew McKay.